San Diego Indie Showcase, Episode 3, Interview with Christopher Cash. Hello, and welcome to the San Diego Indie Showcase podcast, where we bring you the thoughts, passions, and creative work of independent artists living in the area of sunny San Diego, California. This is Paul Bryant, and I want to thank you for joining me here today for my interview with local musician Christopher Cash. Christopher contacted me after I posted an ad on the San Diego Reader website to inform local musicians that this show was available to help them gain some free internet publicity. I was immediately impressed with the quality of his songwriting and the production value of his CD entitled Hollywood Mirage. And since then, I've had the pleasure of seeing his band play live, which was equally exciting. One reason I wanted to produce this podcast in the first place was to introduce people to talented, creative, and original musicians who deserve exposure, despite the music industry's preference for mediocrity and formulaic repetition of the same old, same old. In meeting Christopher through my San Diego Reader ad, I now realize that I too am able to benefit from this podcast by learning about new artists who are regularly performing all around me here in San Diego. And with that brief introduction, let's get right to the interview. This was recorded at the Egyptian Tea Room on Sunday, February 19th, 2006. Okay, we're back at the Egyptian Tea Room. Thanks to Harry for letting us be here again. Today I have a real treat for you. I'm speaking with Christopher Cash. And you can visit his website at www.christophercash.com. You're really going to like what you hear coming up. Thanks for being here, Christopher.
My pleasure.
You have a CD independently produced called Hollywood Mirage with 15, I think, excellent tracks on there.
Thanks.
And I heard a couple other songs at the show the other night. Can you tell us about your background, your musical background, how you got started, influences and such?
Yeah, I've been doing original music ever since I was a kid. I got together with a friend of mine from high school, and we got our acoustic guitars and started writing songs. He had a tape recorder that you can independently record each of the two channels, so we went to town with that and had a blast and started a band called Akimbo. And Akimbo did a bunch of acoustic stuff. We played the Ice House in Pasadena. We ended up getting a violin player, and wow. We had a bass player. We even had a piano player for a while, but piano was too much of a hassle to move around or deal with. So
grand piano.
One of those stand up things. We even took the piano to Atascadero one time and played for a bunch of crazy people. It was a gas. But we started from there, and then. Then it ended up with the same fellow. He's actually the guy that I wrote a couple of songs on the CD with. And we grew electric guitars and became a band called The Privates. But I've just been doing it for the joy of doing it and the art in it. Never made any money off it.
Really? Why not?
That's just kind of the way the industry is right now. I think, you know, it reminds me of the way early television or even early sports were. And the pendulum seems to swing one way and then the other. When those things, you know, at the beginning of professional sports or beginning of professional television or anything, the people that were making the shows or playing the ball games, they didn't make any money. They just did it because they loved to do it. And, you know, after a certain amount of time has gone by, it seems to me that those industries and music too, that, you know, people have started just doing it only for the money and really not even have a lot of the talent sometimes, or just care too much about the money and not enough about the game or about the music or about the art. And I think there's a renaissance coming back, though. There's going to be more, you know, with independent recording and the internet and so forth. I think more people that are doing it just for the joy of doing it and for the art are going to be able to be heard.
Yeah, and there's some very good music out there too that is being heard on the internet, places like this, that you'll probably never hear through a record label. And I think yours is one of them, Hollywood Mirage here. Great disc. What instruments do you play? I know you play various guitars in the show.
Yeah, I play guitar, and I've played bass in bands. I've played organ. My very first band, I bought a Vox Supercontinental organ, which is one of those really cool, you know, 60s looking one that has the black keys where the white keys should be and so forth. And
Do you still have that?
Oh, no, I wished I did. I really wished I did, but I sold it. Actually, I sold it. I traded it in on a Martin acoustic guitar, a D41, and later someone stole that along with a really neat Stratocaster. But mostly, I just play instruments really to facilitate songwriting. I'm not really that great at any of them.
So you write playing guitar, or you switch instruments, whatever works?
I usually use what works. I mean, you can sort of tell from certain songs that which ones I wrote on what, because it, you know, for example, Brace for Collision, I did write on bass, and it sounds very bassy, and, you know, it's got a bass riff and so forth, but mostly guitar.
Now, who is in the band currently?
Well, the band developed because I got tired of trying to put a band together. My original plan for the album was to put a band together and rehearse a bunch of basic tracks and record, and I tried and tried and tried and tried and tried to do that, and it didn't work out. So I decided to just go in the studio with my acoustic guitar and lay down 15 basic tracks to a drum machine and then start overdubbing. And I did that at a local studio here and got the a really good drum track, but I didn't really like the way things were going at that studio, and I was able to come upon Joe Anji in Santa Ana, and he's a great producer and a really, really nice guy, and he helped me sort of put the rest of it together. And to get back to your question, he referred me to Alan Z. He's my bass player. He's a friend of Joe's, and Alan works at one of the local high-tech companies, and he had a copy band, and Mark, my guitar player, was in his copy band.
Oh, okay.
So all of a sudden we had a few people, and it became a matter of finding a good drummer, and I was lucky to find our drummer Kevin, because he had been drumming in... He was a friend of a guy that had been drumming in bands that played back when I was in the Privates, so he knew of the Privates, and you know, kind of a, so I had a little bit of a reputation from that, and found him, and we've been doing pretty well ever since. We actually had a keyboard player too, but he went off to do his own thing and decided that he was kind of on a different direction than we are. But yeah, so we've been together since as a band since about last Christmas, not this.
A year ago.
Yeah, a year ago, right.
Very good. Well, when I saw you live the other night, it was very exciting. I think you're all great players, and there's a lot of energy there. There's a competence to the playing. There's an excitement. Your songs are so well-crafted. That's one thing I like about them lyrically and musically. I'm not sure how you could reproduce the disc live, because you have saxophones, you have synthesizers, you have strings, you have everything. How did you integrate all those other instruments, orchestration and such?
Well, I got a lot of help from Joe on that. Joe's a really, you know, I have to plug Joe's own music, joeanji.com. He's got about four or five albums out himself, and he's just got a real ear for, you know, why don't we put, for example, on the album, there's a song called Cynthia's Smile, and I had that all on acoustic guitar and was, you know, crooning away with it, and he just says, let's get rid of all of this. And, you know, he put piano on there, and all of a sudden, wow, that's turned into a whole different song. I liked it quite a bit. So some of that, I wanted the sax. I love sax because I love Oingo Boingo and, you know, a lot of that kind of new wave sort of saxy type stuff. So I wanted to get sax.
Most musicians do want to get sax. That was a bad joke. I'll put Joe's URL on the website along with this. I'm very impressed with what he did. This is by far the best produced independent CD I've heard. This sounds so professional. Aside from the orchestration, the musicality of it, I mean, the production value is fabulous. So he deserves the plug you gave him there. Answer me this: when you look at the cover, it has the old Hollywood feel to it. You kind of look like Bogey sitting at a desk with a telephone, black and white. Moody. I'm curious, do you consider this a concept album in any way?
Not exactly, although I tried to keep songs on it that were all in some way related to, you know, the media or, you know, movies or TV or how those things affect me or, you know, my outlook on some of them. So it's not really a concept album with a story that moves from the beginning to the end, but it's a collection of songs that kind of have a common theme.
Yeah, I noticed that, especially with television. There's a recurring theme there.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead and play the first song. This is going to be the title track called Hollywood Mirage from Christopher Cash. Okay, that was Hollywood Mirage by Christopher Cash, a great song from a great album. I wanted to ask you about some of the songs on the album, because at the show the other night, you were describing what you were writing about, and I found it fascinating. You actually did two other songs. Let me go over that before I forget, that are not on the album. There was Cube Crisis?
Cube Captive.
Cube Captive, I'm sorry, about working in the...
Yeah, Cube Captive is about my day job, huh? It's kind of a rappy sort of tune about just being stuck, you know, with my ankle chained to my desk there at work.
The Dilbert zone, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I'm pretty sure the guy that writes Dilbert used to be in the cube next to me. I've graduated to working from home now, so that's a good thing. But, you know, I spent a lot of time in cubes and in a high-tech environment. I'm a computer tech by trade and get to talk to people about all their computer problems. Sometimes it's pretty funny. Yeah, so I'm excited about Cube Captives. That if I get another album, that for sure will be on it. That seems to be a song that people like, and I hadn't written it in time for the first one, so...
Well, I noticed it was pretty obvious you were rapping right out of the gate. That was very, very good. I couldn't keep up with that. You have to hold the microphone up high. You know? You're doing very well with that. The other one was Houdini about...
Yeah, Houdini Knew. It's kind of a song just about... I have a great, big, huge Houdini poster in my office, and I think Houdini was great. He came from, you know, way before there were rock stars or before there was... you know, even movies, he was the real thing. I mean, he could get himself out of handcuffs and everything, not by trickery or fakery. He could just do it.
Right.
So I was compelled to write something about him. I thought he was great. And he debunked a bunch of mystics and a very cool guy.
Yeah, I've always liked Houdini. I was real happy when I heard that song.
And he had a Jack Russell Terrier, too, and so do I. So I relate to him
really?
On that level.
Uh-oh. Okay, let's start on the album, the first song, Flicker of Light. Tell me about that one.
Well, Flicker of Light is just, you know, it struck me that with all of the reality TV shows and everything else, all the people you see on TV are thin and beautiful and young and their lives are perfect. They're, you know, 24 and they're the DA of someplace or, you know, the doctor of somewhere. And it's just impossible as a normal human being to keep up with that, you know, and we struggle with people like that being our, you know, the measure by which we try to live up to. And it's kind of about that and how just real people are, you know, it's very flawed being just a normal person. There's no script to go by when you really want to say something important. You just have to make it up on the spot.
That is. There's the book called Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television. And that's one thing he discusses at length is the difference between an image, moving image of a person, and the reality of the person on your brain.
Boy, I was struck.
That's what I thought of when I heard the song.
You know, we're at the Egyptian Tea Room, and I was struck by that. I saw the mask, that Tutankhamun mask, in person. And even though the photographs of that are so beautiful, you walk up there and see it in person, and it's like, wow, now I get it. You know, photos are sort of like the real thing, but not really.
Exactly. I saw that, too, in Chicago years ago. It was unbelievable, the craftsmanship there. And that's been true for the first time I saw the Golden Gate Bridge and various things.
Right.
Television just doesn't cut it. In fact, I stopped watching TV 9 years ago.
I probably should.
Never Look Back. It's the best thing I ever did in my life. How about Brace for Collision, which I call the bass song for obvious reasons.
Oh, Brace for Collision. I just started that with this, just the idea that, you know, kind of a frustrated idea that just about every time things look like they're going pretty well, you know, for some reason they just go to hell. So I decided to kind of just write something about, you know, looking out for things. I'm not sure what that song's about exactly.
Well, I got something out of it. I think people will understand what you were going for. How about Precarious World?
Well, Precarious World, everybody thinks I wrote that about 9/11, and I actually wrote it before 9/11.
Oh, really?
I think I was inspired by that Oklahoma bombing thing and just thinking that, you know, just walking down the street, you know, some kind of a blue ice cube could fall out of an airplane and crash on your head, and that you just need to live every day like it was your last, because it could be. And
no, I think we need to ban blue things in airplanes is what we need to do to protect
that would
ourselves
probably be good.
For the public health. How about Under the Table?
Oh, Under the Table, I've brought in all kinds of elements. I mean, all characters from my life that talks about Lester, you know, being in the jungle, you know, and he was a boss from a hardware store I worked at when I was a kid. And then, you know, there's Judy, I think she's got good biz. Judy was the manager of one of the first bands I was in, and she kept like doing all these weird underhanded things and trying to control band members separately and stuff. It's just a song about how, you know, hidden agendas and so forth.
Very good. Cynthia's Smile.
That was my first shot at writing a waltz, and I like 3/4 time and have written several since. You know, it's just a song about a girl.
Just about a girl. Just so not no one in particular.
Well, not exactly. I mean, she was fairly particular at the time, but.
Oh, you don't have to go into details. I'm not here to pry. Kithacore Wood.
Kithacore Wood is a zone in the video game EverQuest. And it's a kind of a, I don't know if you've played EverQuest, but EverQuest was the biggest massively multiplayer online game ever. It has millions of subscribers, and at any given time you can go on and you become a cartoon character, more like a kind of a fantasy character. You can be an elf or a dwarf or a human, and various different classes, paladins and mages and so forth, and warriors.
I mean, is it different than Dungeons and Dragons? It's
kind of in that theme, but the thing that's different about it is it's a whole world with each person going through this giant computer world, doing, you know, ganging up with each other, and you don't really necessarily fight against one another. You kind of group up and fight big monsters and stuff, and talk. You know, you learn crafts, and so you can build some kind of armor that's, you know, the next guy needs or something. And it's really interesting. And Kithacore Wood is a really dangerous zone that's got all that stuff that I mentioned, skeletons and in there. And it's just fun. I used to play computer games quite a bit.
Interesting. I did not know that. I wasn't sure. I thought maybe that was kind of like Norwegian wood or something. Reference to Lennon. How about Pardon Me?
Oh, that's a pretty old song that I wrote back when I lived in Pasadena and was single and had everybody telling me that, you know, love is free, and I just didn't buy off on it, and I still don't. It's love is something more of an investment than any kind of freebie.
It's a lot of hard work.
But good payoffs.
And the last one is the closer here, Electronic Religion, which is my personal favorite on the album. Tell me about that one.
A guy that I played with in the privates was a speaker reconer, and in his office he had a cartoon up on his wall that had Jesus crucified on a television antenna. And I thought, oh man, we got to write something about that. So I came up with that song in response to that cartoon. I think it was pretty cool.
That's great. It's a very good song. You have some sound clips in there. How did you obtain the sound clips? Don't you have to get the rights to them?
Oh, well, there's a sound effects CD. I've got a bunch of them, and one of the sound effects CD was this whole thing of various television stuff, and I spent a bunch of time just chopping it up and trying to get it to fit nicely in my I wanted it to, you know, sound like they were changing channels and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it comes with the rights when you buy the CD.
Oh, okay. All right, let's go ahead with another song here. We're going to play next Under the Table.
Under the table, Lester feels at home in the jungle. He waits deception, so they never make it look that way. Whenever there's a want, whenever there's a need, they're under the table. Judy says she's got good business, cause she makes him think it's his idea. Then some undetected hand controls him under the table. The chances of an avalanche. You better watch under your table for an extra pair of hands. Now check it out. It on your TV screen. Whenever there's an issue they don't want to let out, it goes under the table. W says we got problems. He really doesn't know what to do, so he's waiting for suggestions with an open hand that's under the table. Don't go. Oh, no. It gives him the advantage of an extra.
Okay, that was Under the Table by Christopher Cash from his CD. Do we call them albums or CDs these days? I never know.
Well, sometimes records. I call them a record and really confuse people and show my age.
Vinyl's now used as something you scratch up, which horrifies me. from his CD, Hollywood Mirage. Spoke a bit earlier about influences. We didn't quite get in there. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. This is just me. The first time I heard The Desk, I thought Joe Jackson. Is that crazy, or is there a reason for that?
Oh, I like Joe Jackson. Some of my favorites... one of my very favorite artists is Stan Ridgway. I love Stan Ridgway. He was the lead singer to Wall of Voodoo, but his best stuff was done after Wall of Voodoo. I like him a lot. I like Elvis Costello.
Okay.
You know, all the usual suspects from the 80s.
Very good. That's I think Billy Joel, a hint of Billy Joel. This is on the first listening. And by the way, every time I listen to this, I just like it more and more. I love discs that do that for me, so thank you. Tell me, as an independent musician, and like you said, you're not in it for the money, you're in it for the love of it, which I deeply respect. I think that's the way it should be. How do you feel about this whole independent music fiasco with file sharing and this powerful music industry essentially preventing people like you from being heard as much as you could be if we were allowed? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, they've been doing that for years, and I think that what's happening now is that's starting to not work. Even the greatest artists around right now, some of them have gone independent. For example, there's the Pernice brothers. There's they're doing really well independently. Just a ton of artists that are pretty well recognized, you know, names that just got sick of their record contracts and decided to do it on their own. And so I think that we're in the beginnings of a real change the way media is moving towards. And in a way, stuff like this podcast is a great example. Instead of waiting around for your favorite radio show or your favorite TV show or your favorite album or whatever, why not just subscribe? The best TV is subscription TV today. Mm-hmm. HBO kicks butt on everything else out there. I'm so sick of being censored so that you don't see one of Janet Jackson's breasts, like that was going to cause me to go shuddering into a coma. And so I just think that media is going to change a lot, and the record companies and television companies are going to have to change too.
So you think there won't be any more 16-year-old girls wearing tight clothes for the benefit of older men,
no,
disguised as musicians anymore?
Well, there have been those ever since time began and will always be, I think, but there'll be room for more. People will be able to choose what they want to consume rather than select from, you know, a menu of not particularly desirable choices.
Amen, brother. That's what we're waiting for. Tell me now, where are the places around town that you play?
We play at a club called O'Connell's. We've played recently a new place that's the San Diego Boat and Ski Club. That's, both of those clubs are associated with the ListenLocalSD.com that Catherine Beeks is running. She's done a lot to promote local artists, and I should give her a plug because she's a great lady. And we've played Dream Street. We played the Hot Monkey Love Cafe. We played the Ramona Street Fair. That was kind of fun.
Really?
And, you know, we're always looking for new places to play, but it's difficult sometimes for original acts. They want to make sure that you bring in a horde of 50 or 60 screaming fans to drink all their beer, and that's not so easy. And
that's the,
but we're working on it.
That is the very difficult part, and that's why I applaud places like Egyptian Tea Room, Hot Monkey Love, O'Connell's, who allow open mic nights, which isn't the best forum for gaining a national audience, but it allows you to be heard and to build that 50
right.
people.
I do that every once in a while, too, play at Twigs and do an open mic. I enjoy the open mic thing as well because, I mean, like anybody that creates new art, the coolest thing that I'm working on is the one I just finished, and, you know, I'm anxious to play it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to run and teach to the band and stuff, so there's a big lag of you know, several practices and, you know, a couple months, and when I get through writing something, I want to go play it someplace, so it's fun to go to those open mics and just play something new.
Okay, well, I think we're running short on time because we're playing so many songs from the album, which we should do because they're all excellent. Your website is www.christophercash.com.
Exactly.
And people can order the CD there?
Yeah, it's through there's a link there. They can get it through CD Baby or notlame.com. They're both linked there.
Okay, and I encourage everybody to go there and listen to the album and purchase the album, support what Christopher's doing. This is really great stuff. I'm sure all of you will agree. I want to thank you, Christopher, very much for being here. I know this is kind of a strange setup with all these wires sitting around a coffee shop, but like you said, it's great that we're able to do this.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for doing it. There's a lot of value in it.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the San Diego Indie Showcase. My name is Paul, and I hope you enjoyed this interview with Christopher Cash as much as I enjoyed chatting with him. Be sure to visit Christopher's website at www.christophercash.com. You'll find the link on my podcast website. I would also like to encourage you to order his CD, Hollywood Mirage, and to learn where you can see his band play live, which I highly recommend. They really do put on an entertaining show. Let me thank Harry and the staff at the Egyptian Tea Room once again for accommodating our recording of a podcast interview. The Egyptian Tea Room is located on College Avenue near SDSU, one block north of El Cajon Boulevard at the corner of College and Adams. The Egyptian Tea Room is a locally owned establishment, which is one reason I support it, and that would be reason enough for you to support it even if they didn't have such great coffee and tea, a large menu of tasty Egyptian-styled food, hookahs, and live entertainment that includes open mic nights, performer showcases, and even belly dancing. I'm going to end this episode with one last song from Christopher Cash, but before I do, I'd like to suggest that you visit my website, www.sandiegoindieshowcase.com, and click on the subscription link in the upper right-hand corner. This will give you simple instructions for downloading a free podcatcher program called Juice. or you can use any other podcatcher if you prefer. Now, a podcatcher is a program that allows you to subscribe to podcasts like this, much like a newspaper subscription. And what it does is automatically checks for updates to the podcasts you've subscribed to every time you log on to the internet, and it will automatically download any new episodes to your computer. So you can put them on your MP3 player or listen to them on your computer. You don't have to constantly check the website for updates. I'll leave you now with a brand new song that Christopher Cash recently wrote. This is entitled 3 Minutes Late. Christopher pulled out his acoustic guitar, and we recorded this song right after we finished recording the interview. And I must say, the recording actually sounds quite good. And the song itself, of course, is up to his usual high standards. So please enjoy the song. I thank you again for joining me here today. And until next time, take care.
Daddy was a pipe fitter, a laborer by trade. He'd leave the house before the sun woke to greet the day. I'd lie in bed and I'd listen as his work truck left the drive. After school I'd watch for him through the window shade. Mama worked in the kitchen waxing up the floor, expecting any minute he'd be walking through that big front door. She kept a smile for him on her face. She did it with a certain grace and never asked for more. At the shop he was a quiet man, but if you talked to him he might tell a story back in 44 of a howling jungle fight. The Japs had pinned him down behind a tree. There was smoke burning in his eyes. If he hadn't caught up with the company, they'd have left him there to die. Mama, she waited in the kitchen, took it up the floor. She was waiting for the day she'd hear a knock on that big front door. But she kept a smile for him on her face. And she did it with a certain grace and never asked for more. I always wondered why Mom got that look of dread in her eye, and her delicate hands would start to shake every time that my dad was more than 3 minutes late. She'd start thinking about those days. Friday night, Dad would come home from work, throw the fishing poles into the van, pull the trailer to the beach out on Highway 1. We'd just park it right there in the sand. He'd put his hand on my shoulder, but he would never talk down to me. He'd say, life can get complicated, son. You gotta stand up for what you believe.